This is Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Rejection. It comes in many forms, doesn't it? You might be knocked back for a job. You might have asked someone on a date, finally got up the guts to ask them, and then you get a firm but polite no. It may run a little deeper than that. Perhaps you've been ostracised because of your cultural background. Sometimes people experience rejection from a parent or a loved one. You might even try to be intimate from time to time with your partner, only to be battered away. Rejection, it can be a huge blow to your self-esteem, and it can sometimes change how we view the world. In extreme cases, it can have traumatic effects on the way we function emotionally, socially, and even physiologically. But we are in control of the way we deal with rejection, and it is a skill you can learn at any age. So today, I want you, as part of this discussion, to let me know, because we all experience it at some point, and some of us more than others, that's true to say. Do you have a memory of the first time you ever experienced rejection? Perhaps it was in childhood. With me today, Fiona Bennett, manager of the West Leaderville branch of Relationships Australia. She's got a background in psychology and counselling, and Joe Collins, General Manager, Metro Operations from Wansley. They help needy families and children. It's an organisation that particularly works, and what she's going to talk about is helping to children to turn feelings of rejection into lifelong familial bonds. That's what we're going to talk about with Joe today. A little later on, you're going to meet an award-winning author, illustrator, Josh Langley. His books include Magnificent Mistakes and Fantastic Failures, Finding the Good When Things Seem Bad, and also It's Okay to Feel the Way You Do. He goes out to the schools and he speaks to kids about this very topic. So we're going to hear a little later on from him. But welcome to you, Fiona and Joe, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Hello.
Fiona, let's start with your earliest memory of rejection.
Well, this can be a really difficult thing to admit, but mine was in the playground. And it's interesting, from my school days, I can remember more about the times I was rejected than the times I was included. And I'm not quite sure what's going on in my brain there, but I'm sure we'll get to that at some point in this show. I can remember not being picked for the netball team. You know, I was that kid that was the last one standing because I couldn't jump. But I can also remember there's a really distinct memory that I have of a group of girls and a group of boys. And I just remember feeling rejected by the boys. And I thought, that's really interesting. If I look back on that, I think, oh, that's really interesting in primary school that I remember the boys not wanting to chase me. I wasn't the girl that was the kiss chase girl, you know. So those are my kind of early primary school kind of memories of rejection.
I think a few people will be at home completely sympathetic and agreeing that they've had similar experiences. Did you have to have a big hard think of those, or are they things that have stayed with you over time?
Look, I think in certain ways they pop up in my mind every now and again. I might get a social experience that kind of have echoes of it. But what I try and do is just kind of turn it around and think, well, I did have friends that I played with at primary school. Some people did like me and want to include me in my games. But you kind of have to do that consciously. It's interesting that that doesn't seem the default. The default is protecting us against rejection.
Why does it hurt so much? I mean, as you just said, Fiona Bennett, you had friends. I know I had friends, but when we get that rejection, we don't get the part in the school play or picked for the netball team. It just hurts even at that young age, particularly at that young age.
It does. And there has been research on our brains. It's actually a kind of neurological, biological thing that goes on in our brains, because to survive, we used to need to be part of a group. Back in the day, we couldn't get on by ourselves in the wild. We needed a group. We needed a tribe. We needed people around us to actually stay alive. So we need that acceptance from groups that we are in or that we are around.
What is rejection in social psychology? What are the different types, I suppose, Fiona Bennett?
The different types in a social situation come back to that same kind of thing of us wanting to feel accepted by others. It's important to get a nod when we're, you know, when we're talking. Somebody understanding us, someone accepting us, inviting us along to something. You know, we like to feel liked, don't we?
I'm certainly nodding a lot of just saying that to make you feel warm in this studio. What are some of the ways we can react to it?
Some of the ways that we can react to it are to make it about ourselves, and that can be where it becomes quite harmful for us in the way that we think, oh, what did I do wrong? What is it about me? And so that's quite often a reaction. Sometimes we can get angry. How dare they not, you know, bring me in or accept me? So those are often the two most common kind of reactions when we experience some kind of rejection.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
It is. I'm asking for your experiences of rejection, and Trevor is a salesman. He's got some experience. Hello, Trevor.
Okay.
I've quite a bit of experience, Trevor.
Yes. As a sales rep, we get rejected all the time, which is perfectly fine and normal. What I'm finding lately is I'm getting rejected by ghosting. It seems to be a new trend. What are your thoughts on that? People just don't return your calls, will not respond to emails or messages, and they just disappear.
Let me get a response there. Before I get a response from the panel here, Trevor, how do you deal? I mean, I'm assuming with, you know, you're a salesman, you've probably got, you know, I think you've got a bit of experience of this. So you've got ways of dealing with it. Have you got a number one way that you deal with rejection in the workplace when you're out there?
Certainly. No, all I do is I do what I do, and the answer is one way or the other. It's either a yes or a no. And when I get that answer, I move on. So if it's a yes, I've got a sale. If it's no, I move on. So it's one or the other. I don't hold myself to the outcome.
So is the ghosting then the thing that's, is it frustrating? Is that what you're finding about the ghosting rather than the yes or no?
Yes, yeah. They're very frustrating because you don't get an outcome. You don't get any feedback as to, well, okay, it's a no for this reason or whatever.
You've raised a really good point there, Trevor. I'm going to get a response there from Fiona Bennett. So ghosting, you know, where you just don't get a response. Is it, I mean, that is a form of rejection. Why would that make Trevor feel the way he is feeling?
Well, I'm really happy that this is brought up because I was thinking about this in preparation for the show because it does feel like it's something that's quite common these days, doesn't it? Where people talk about this just not getting a response. It's as if the person has disappeared and then you're left wondering why. Was it something I didn't do, something I did do, something I did, you know, something wrong about me? Whereas quite often, actually, it's about the other person not feeling able, for whatever their reasons are, not feeling able to be honest, not feeling able to actually front up and say the yes or the no. They might have their own complicated reasons for it, but that not knowing is really hard. That's the hardest part of it.
It was a good question. I want to get to a more serious form of rejection, and that is when it relates to children. Children, particularly children from needy families. But I want to bring Joe Collins in here, General Manager, Metro Operations from Wansley. And as I said, they work with sort of families and children who are in need, and it's sadly a growth area. This isn't an easy subject to talk about, Joe, and it's one that requires a high level of sensitivity. You work with foster families and children across Perth. What have you observed about feelings of rejection in that context? Because it's a little more serious.
Mm. Well, rejection for children that are brought into care by child protection. They're brought into care for good reasons where children are being abused and they're unsafe in their families of origin. But what happens is most children who do experience abuse or feel unsafe in their families simply want the abuse to stop. They actually don't want to be removed from their families. And so for them, being moved into a new place, whether it be a foster family or a residential type setting, it can actually make them feel punished and feel guilty about maybe speaking out about the abuse, speaking badly about their parents. And so really being placed out of their own home is a rejection. They're feeling rejected by their parents, their family. Siblings sometimes can actually blame other siblings for being placed in care. And so for children who really have depending on their age and stage of development, have perhaps a limited capacity to really understand the thoughts and feelings that go around as to why they've been removed. It can really be quite a damage to their ongoing relationships with their families and cause them to have long-term issues with forming good relationships. So they're constantly feeling a sense of rejection. The point that Fiona just brought up before about it's, you know, how the other people are responding. And unfortunately, for children that do experience that grief and loss and don't understand or get support and how to understand their feelings around that rejection, will often end up placing themselves in situations and rejecting people before they are rejected. So it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy, and they just feel constantly in a state of being unloved and unwanted.
I imagine that's something you might see quite a lot, Fiona Bennett, and that would be something you can help clients with when they've had that experience.
Yes, Jessica, we certainly do experience problems in adult life as a result of the beliefs and the expectations that we've formed from our childhood experiences. And it can take a while to work those through because our childhood, you know, it kind of does impact our brain. It impacts ourselves. But certainly through counselling and through, you know, a supportive environment, those beliefs, yes, are possible to change and to be more adaptive in a healthy way.
So, Jo Collins, there's no one-size-fits-all for these kids because they're not one-size-fits-all. No kid is one-size-fits-all. But when these kids come in and they are feeling vulnerable and unloved, what sort of things do you do to help support them to deal with those feelings?
So I think, you know, when children come into care, we try to gather as much information as we can. And sometimes that's limited in the beginning. And we will also try to match them with an appropriate foster family. So some foster carers are fairly new. Some foster carers are very experienced. So depending on the type of trauma that a child has experienced, we need to match them up with a carer that's got the skill to be able to respond to them appropriately. It's kind of like counterintuitive parenting. Mm. So they need to respond sometimes in a way that is not a normal parent would respond. So understanding perhaps the motivation for a child's behaviours, which may come through as a result of their loss, their grief and their feeling of being rejected. So as they're pushing them away, you know, just remain alongside them and let them know that they're here for them, they're willing to stick it out with them and that they are cared for. And it's really around that consistent messaging, which in a way is a therapeutic approach to ensuring that children start to develop a different understanding of how relationships with adults or caregivers can be formed.
I'm wondering, Jo Collins, you're explaining what's it like working with kids who can't live at home and the feelings of rejection that come from that. Is there a particular story that comes to mind as you're telling us this? You must obviously know names, but is there a particular story that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, so in my previous part of my career, I actually worked for Child Protection, and I was a team leader of a placement team, which actually looked at identifying suitable placements for children as they came into care. And there was one young man. He was about 12, and he was actually placed with a great family, you know, quite middle class, really supportive of him, wanted him to go into their local private school where their son attended, had a great relationship with him. But knowing this young person, there was a really clear pattern that every 12 months he would then start to really push the boundaries with caregivers, and to the point that he would act in such a way that carers would sort of say, look, we can't do this anymore. This is too difficult, too hard. We can't do it. And they would end the placement. You hear about children moving through a number of different placements.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah. And that, unfortunately, the children or the young people end up getting in a position, like I mentioned before, where they end up rejecting their caregivers before they have chance to be rejected by them. So they develop this pattern, and they go through a number of different placements because it actually is comfortable for them, gives them some control over their lives to reject them first.
Might get a response from you to that, Fiona Bennett. I mean, that would be very common in psychological or counselling terms. Is there a term for that?
I don't know whether there's an official term for it, but it certainly resonates with me. You know, we're protective of ourselves, so we would rather do the rejecting than being rejected. So that idea as well, bringing it to a kind of adult situation where somebody might have got rejected from a couple of job applications, that will quite often mean that they apply for less because they don't want to experience that rejection. You know, we do protect ourselves from the hurt that the rejection gives to us.
Do you ever see children go through the system and recover from rejection? I mean, you work now for Wansley, but you worked for many years in the state system, child protection system.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, there's so many different variables that actually can support a child to heal and develop really positive relationships. And sometimes it's really around the child's temperament and personality. It's the personality of the caregivers around them. It might be a significant experience, like Gemma just discussed, but a positive experience that actually changes their perception of themselves and how they view others around them. So all of these different experiences can actually have really positive effects. And yes, I'm aware of some young people that have been placed in care that have had long-term relationships with their foster carers, really positive relationships with their biological parents, and a good relationship between their biological parents and the foster care. It's ended up being almost like a shared care, extended family arrangement over a long time. And it didn't start like that, but there certainly is a way to get there if everybody's willing.
Tim is experiencing a bit of ghosting. Hello, Tim.
Hey, how are you going?
Good. What's happening with you? Where have you been ghosted?
I thought I would wet my feet and try the old online dating dating profiles and stuff. And, you know, they all talk about, the people that you talk to, they say, oh, I hate being ghosted, but they all do it. And it's an awful feeling because you sit there, you know, everything's conversation's flowing, or you meet the person and then you might message them, hey, how are you going? And then you don't hear anything back. And there's been a couple of times where I've said, oh, you know, have I said something wrong? And then I've gone and I've questioned myself. So I've gone back through the messages and there's nothing. And then, you know, the ones that I find most staggering is they'll clearly, because there's so many lollies in the lolly basket that they can pick and choose what they want, you'll hear from them in 3 weeks' time going, oh, sorry, I've been really busy. And it's like, well, you know, or you just don't hear from them at all. And it's not great.
Tim, good on,
turned into dicks,
good on you for giving the online dating scene a go, because it's a growth area and I think it's a good way in this day and age to meet people. I'm wondering, so the hardest bit is more the ghosting where you just don't get a clear outcome. You're the kind of person who wants a yay or a nay and a reason for that yay or nay?
Yeah, I am. Like, it would be nicer. I just think it's rude, but I think that, you know, if you say, look, I'm not interested, then that's cool. Move on to the next, you know, prospect of partner, you know, or, you know, like, but it's just not, yeah, it just doesn't happen that way anymore.
Tim, best of luck, and I reckon you'll be the right candy for someone at some point. But I want to bring Josh Langley into this chat about rejection. He's an award-winning author and illustrator. He goes out to schools to talk to kids about the things that trouble them. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Jess. How are you?
Good, thanks. What are the sorts of things that you work through with students? What are some of the common themes?
I suppose one of the things I mainly talk about that it's okay to make mistakes. The kids are so reluctant to try new things for fear of making mistakes and looking like a goose in front of their friends and things like that. And so I try and work with them to say, hey, no, mistakes are part of being human. That's how we become better people. We make a mistake, we learn from it, we grow, and then we'll make another mistake and we'll keep doing the same things. Because I've noticed that there's a trend of really awfulizing over mistakes and really stressing about it when we really, really don't need to when it's just part of being human. And we also, you know, tackle the idea of failure and how devastating failure can be, which also is part of it, like a rejection as well. And going, well, what opportunities can you look in failure if you fail a test or come last in a running race or something like that? How can you look at that differently to get a sort of more positive outcome? So they're some of the topics that I talk about in my school talks. And also, being you is enough. One of the other things that kids need to know that they're fine just the way they are, so they don't get all these anxieties and all this stress and all that sort of stuff.
I imagine a lot of adults probably still feel some of this as well, so it's great to be getting in and talking to the kids early about it. Hey, Josh Langley, I'm wondering, how are you received by the children when you go out to the schools, and how does that differ from how they might treat, I don't know, their teachers or their family members telling them this stuff?
Oh, look, it's quite funny because I look at the expressions on the kids' faces when I, you know, say it's okay to be different, it's okay to make a mistake, and sort of explain it. Yeah, the year ones to year threes, look, their eyes go wide and they go, oh, okay. But it's the fives and sixes that I look at, and it's almost like a weight lifted off their shoulders. This sort of pressure to be perfect, the pressure to keep, you know, achieving, suddenly just reduces a little bit, and they feel like they can try and accept themselves a little bit more for who they are. And then I look at the teachers, and the teachers are looking at me, and some of them will come up afterwards and go, Josh, I've been trying to teach these kids this all year, and you come in and they just understand it straight away. What are you doing?
I'm wondering, why are kids, to your mind, from the kids you deal with, scared to fail or be rejected? What secrets are they letting you in on?
Well, tell you the truth, I'm not too sure. I think society in general is just getting such a high-pressure society at the moment. The desire to do well and to achieve academically, it's always been there, but I think there's a lot more pressure on it these days. And also with social media coming in and with kids younger getting onto social media, that pressure is coming in to have the perfect look, the perfect friends, the perfect body, all that sort of stuff is coming in. So all this added extra pressure on kids is there. And it doesn't need to be. They just need to be reframed, put in different perspectives. So,
Josh, you don't only speak to kids. You go out and talk to adults as well. And here mm-hmm. you were recently went to the Geraldton Writers Festival to run some writing workshops for adults. What do you hear from people who are keen to write but may be a little mm-hmm. nervous of this particular thing, rejection?
Look, rejection is one of the biggest things in the writing community. It's. I know a lot of people who refuse to even submit a manuscript to a publisher for fear of that rejection. And for me, it's one of those rites of passage. It's what it is to be a writer, is to have that rejection, be able to look at that rejection in a more positive light and go, well, look, what can I take away from that? Am I going to let it defeat me, or am I going to sort of use it to fire my motivation to keep going? I'll give you a quick example of how I myself was able to reframe it. When I first got my first book out there, I submitted the manuscript to about five different publishers and got rejected by four. Now, by the fourth one, I went, I am going to celebrate this. So I went and got a cheap bottle of champagne because I couldn't afford an expensive one, a cheap one, and I celebrated because I thought, well, I'm brave enough to actually submit when a lot of people don't have the courage to. They leave the manuscript in the third drawer down or on the hard drive in the computer, and that's the world's loss, that they don't get to see that. So I thought, I'm going to celebrate it, and I kept going. And I kept going, and I got a contract, and I got a publishing contract, and 10 years, and the rest is history.
Next time I have a failure, I'll be popping some champers, cheap champers. Thanks, Josh Langley. He's an author, he's an illustrator, and he's a children's speaker. Now, I want to bring you back in here, Joe Collins, General Manager, Metro Operations with Wansley. I want to hear some positivity here. How do people feel when they've been able to help a child heal from this trauma? What are some of the responses here from carers, well, even child protection workers?
Yeah, look, I was chatting to Fiona before we came in. I mean, I've been in this field now for 17 years, and I certainly wouldn't do it if it wasn't rewarding. So for every story that you might read that is not so great, every single day, whether you work with the children directly, whether you're a carer, whether you work in the child protection system, there are amazing people doing amazing work, all focused on creating children whose lives have a better outcomes. So they get to live, I don't like to use the word normal because there is no normal, but they get to be their best selves and live their best lives in whichever way that may be. And most importantly, even if they are placed in care, that they are able to have really good, strong connections with their family, and their family remains part of their life, because that's so important for them as an adult to have that relationship and have that positive relationship.
Fiona Bennett, rejection, is it how powerful a feeling is it? And do we feel it on a number of different, I suppose, realms, physical, mental, and others?
the way that our brain reacts when we experience an emotional reaction has been proven to be the same as experiencing physical pain. So our brain is a wonderfully clever part of our body, but it also tricks us sometimes. And so the rejection, yeah, that we experience is on all sorts of levels, physical, mental, emotional, definitely.
I'm wondering, Fiona, the long-term effects of this, those sorts of experiences, that one there that Jared just sent through, we can miss opportunities and it can have profound impacts on other things throughout our life. So how do we overcome some of those feelings of being scared to do something because of an early experience of rejection?
It can feel scary to keep trying. Josh used the word, you know, kind of being brave enough. It takes a lot of courage to keep trying if we're worried about that rejection happening again. So making sure that we work out who around us is supportive, keeping people that we know will kind of hold us up when we need a little bit of extra in that respect. At the same time as making sure that the way we talk to ourselves builds us up rather than taking on board that critical rejection.
A mum's texted in and just said, "It's been nearly a decade since my children last saw their dad. We know where he lives. There are court orders allowing him to have contact. There have been no phone calls, no birthday cards, nothing. When we separated, I didn't think it would be like this. I'm okay with him hating me, but if he has to hate someone, sure, pick me. But our children don't deserve to have him in their lives. And yes, rejection and abandonment have been massive issues in their young lives. Yes, I'm imagining that one might be quite common and a difficult situation for all." I talked at the start about that ultimately we are in control of the way we deal with rejection, and it is a skill you can learn at any age. What are some of the ways that you arm some of the children that come through the system needing help because they quite simply can't live at home with their parents?
Yeah, look, I think it's about really for the child or young person to know what they can have control over. The example you just read out about the children who've not been seeing their dad, you know, it would be very easy for children to develop a self-belief that they are unloved or unwanted by this person. But really it's about you can support the child to develop different ways of thinking about it, that there's something going on for that person and it's not about them, because that opens then opportunities in the future if they are to reconnect, that they don't have to actually get over all of that hurt and betrayal. They're actually open to understanding perhaps what it was like for that person at that point in time, the reason they were unable to connect with a child. I mean, for some parents whose children are in care, their sense of loss and grief is so high, they sometimes can't see their children either because actually seeing them is too hurtful. So, you know, there's sometimes some different context to understand. But certainly if you give children a different perspective on things, that can help them understand that they are not at fault and it's not they who is being rejected. It might be a circumstance that's actually occurring.
Fiona Bennett, can I get your take on that? The fact that, you know, ultimately we are in control of the way we deal with rejection.
Yes, we are. It sometimes doesn't feel like we are because rejection is someone else's opinion of us. So it feels like it's out of our control. But what we take on from that and the meaning that we make of it is what's in our control. And it's a slightly simplified kind of example, but I'm thinking if you go to a restaurant and you're looking through the menu, you'll reject quite a few things off that menu because you're not in the mood for it, you don't feel like it, it might be a bit spicy or a bit bland. The food can still be quite delicious, nothing about the meal itself. It's just what you like or what you don't like. So kind of twisting that round in terms of if you feel rejected by someone else, it's more about them and what they want or need or what they're available to do or not.
So then how important is self-awareness of rejection then?
Self-awareness, I sing its praises the whole time. I think, you know, we can't have too much of it.
You and every other counsellor and psychologist in the world.
So that awareness of how we're reacting to it, what meaning we're making of it, is really important. And that distinction between what's about us and what's about the other person is always helpful to separate out.
Yep, definitely. I would agree. Yes, it's. I love the phrase "making meaning" because it is. It's all of these different things are happening. All of these different interactions are happening around us all the time for children with caregivers or parents, and for children whose brains are developing. It's around how they make meaning and how they have the capacity to make meaning. And sometimes it needs the parents or caregivers to give them a bit of a sounding board so they understand what is going on in those interactions, so they don't form this belief that it's about them.
A beautiful way to wrap up our discussion on rejection. My big thanks to Fiona Bennett, manager of the West Leaderville branch of Relationships Australia, Joe Collins, general manager, Metro Operations at Wansley, and also for Josh Langley, author and illustrator, who joined us to tell us of his experiences talking to kids.